Welcome back to the Mawa Distinct Show. I'm Shirley Nordrum.
I'm Sharon Nordrum.
And today we're visiting with Wasan, Renee Dillard. She is Ottawa from the Little Traverse Bay band in Michigan. And she is a weaver of basswood and cedar. She's also a black ash basket maker. And she is on tour with a student who's doing their dissertation on researching mats that have been made by various Anishinaabe weavers in the past. These materials are now in museums. And we were lucky enough to catch up with her on her way through to look at some mats at Bemidji State University. We are so excited to get this interview. We have so much audio, about 3.5 hours actually, so it was really hard to make it into a 30-minute show and share all the wisdom and knowledge and humor that Wasan had to share with us. So we actually made a two-part show. So this is part one, and don't forget to turn in next week to hear part two. And if you want to hear all the audio, get in touch with me. I would be happy to share all 3.5 hours with you. Hope you enjoy the show.
All weaving is related. I started this weaving journey through finger weaving.
Did you?
And I started when I was about 8 or 9.
Oh, wow. You've been really weaving a long time.
Yeah. I've been weaving my whole life. Yeah. So I started with finger weaving and then started to go backwards. So I did finger weaving. Then we learned baskets because I cut the leather wrong and I spilled the beads and I sneezed on the ribbon work. You know, I along that journey when I was a kid, I learned how to do a lot of things, but my niche was weaving. My sister excelled at ribbon work. My other sister is an excellent bead worker. Yeah, but my thing was weaving. So I started out with finger weaving, went to splint basketry, and then started cattail mats. I don't know if anybody does those.
I've seen them, but I've never seen anybody do them.
Yeah.
I've just seen examples of them.
Yeah. There's no market for it.
Yeah.
So there's not a... When we're busy healing ourselves from the whole boarding school trauma and the residual effects within our family from that, you know, everybody's... There's no market to make those mm-hmm. anymore. Unless we want to cover our lodges again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's the quest that I'm on.
Yeah.
So Mom made me make a bone needle. And all of this time, I didn't go to a football game or a basketball game. I never went to a school dance or extracurricular activity. I couldn't do it because we were busy doing this. And within my lifetime, we went from being illegal to legal.
Yeah.
So I remember all our ceremonies being in the basement, all darkroom ceremonies, all hidden from view, hidden sacred fires and all of that. And then within a 10-year span, everybody started wearing turquoise. And their great-grandma was Cherokee. Yeah.
And their grandma's still Cherokee.
They were calling us just the most vile names that they could think of to call us. And then they wanted to be us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, okay. So I just saw a lot of changes, and I was reflecting on all of that because I think she was an anthropologist, her name was Karen Peterson, and we were researching the work that she was doing at Mille Lacs and through Leech Lake, White Earth. She had contacts all around. She was a non-native lady, and she was kind of brokering their goods to help them make a living. And so she was fantastic because she was an anthropologist. She saved all of her correspondence. So I went through reading those letters. It was a difficult day. We went 2 days looking at that stuff. And she was in the process of changing their culture and their value system by doing it that way.
Mm-hmm.
Although it was, you know, an immediate fix for right now, in the long term, it was changing their thinking. And I saw notes that were written in broken English and notes that were written by someone else and lots of illnesses, people going blind, houses being burnt down, had to move because the freeway came or the road went through my property and all of these things. And she wasn't able to pay outright for the big goods right away, but for trinket stuff, she could pay them right away. And they were so happy to get their $7 for a load of beadwork. I mean, it was, and for the, that was all in the 50s, the letters that we were writing. And they were getting pennies for the, for hours of labor. So in today's wages, some of the, it was just, when you go on the scale, it was just really bad. She wasn't paying them what they were. But it's what the market could take. And so she was actually, her heart was in the right place. She was helping, but not really. In the long run, right. It was hurting.
Right.
And a lot of times they just don't know that. They're just not aware of that. The thing about, there's a lot of cedar bark that comes from here. I don't know what Leech Lake, what that reservation, I mean, is it B-E-N-A? Pronounce that.
Bina.
Is it Bina? Mm-hmm. Okay. Because I don't know. Bina is part of Leech Lake?
Yeah, it's right in the heart.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So is Net Lake part of Leech Lake?
No,
no. Net Lake.
Cass Lake is a town on the Leech Lake Reservation.
Okay. Yeah. And but Net Lake is north.
Net Lake is north. Yeah.
Yeah, she did some business there. What Crystal's amazing work is doing is she's, I like the way that she did it. She shared with me some of what she was writing, and she said a lot of times if you do get a photo of the women making a mat or something, mm-hmm. you never get to see them, just their hands, you know,
yeah.
working on there. You never get to see a picture of who they are or their backside. You never get to see their face or any of that. And when they collected it, they just said, Ojibwe woman. And so what Crystal's work is, which is so amazing, she's putting names to it. She's reconnecting their hands to the weaving. It's amazing. So there's a lady here that was Mrs. O-L-E, Ollie Sam.
Also, the Sams come from Mille Lacs.
Oh, was it Mille Lacs? Okay, there was another one called Mammy Humphrey.
Yeah, okay. Humphreys come from Leech Lake.
Bina, yeah. Because that's where her address was from. When we went through there, we almost diverted to look for her house. I gotta tell you, Mamie Humphrey, Mrs. Mamie Humphrey, she was a cool lady. This was all looking at those letters. Here's this grandma from there in about 54, 55, somewhere in there. And Karen Peterson, the anthropologist, writes her. And I don't know what she had said to her, but her answer back is, I don't tell other people what to do. Which is because everyone is tiptoeing around Karen Peterson because she's holding the purse strings.
Yeah.
She's got the coin purse.
Mm-hmm.
So they're being really nice and really Christian sounding. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that they can, she holds the answer to three hots and a cot.
Right.
You know, everything that they need in order to get by. And so Mrs. Humphrey gets on there and she goes, well, I wouldn't presume to ever tell anybody else what to do. And if you think Mrs. Fairbanks' things are better, then go, maybe you can tell her what to do. Maybe you can buy her stuff. You know, maybe she sent it back because Peterson sent some stuff back before and said, this isn't nice enough or something like that.
It was
hard to read.
Yeah.
It was hard to go through this stuff. And then there was another correspondence with the church people there, and it says, quit paying the Indians directly. They're keeping all of the profit for themselves.
Oh, good grief.
Isn't that hard?
Yeah.
And then she warned her, she said, watch out for Mrs. Humphrey. Or the church people wrote back to Mrs. Humphrey and said, yeah, that sounds like something that she would do. I don't know what the correspondence was, but they were kind of building her a reputation between them. But she was an excellent weaver and a mat maker at that. Yeah. Yeah, she did well at what she did, and she started to make willow baskets. No, not willow. Not like that.
Not the rounded with
That's totally European. But okay. It was selling.
Uh-huh.
And then that custom seems like it's been passed down.
We made a willow basket. What did it look like?
It was. It's yours now. Well. But it started with make something, and they didn't want a pound. Eh? A lot of these women were widows, or their men's were gone finding work. You know right. how it was.
Yeah.
Right. You know, and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. so, and then I saw a lot of excuses. I can't do it because we're ricing. I can't do it because I opened my house for hunters. And that's probably your winter meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know
yeah,
what I mean? To open your house to hunters so that they can stay there and you kind of cater to them. And then you get a portion of, you know, so that you can get by. So I can't do that right now. And she's too busy taking care of all these hunters, you know.
Because you got to cook for them. My grandma and grandpa did that.
Yeah.
They opened a house and they said they could... I don't know how, because I saw the foundation of their house was just tiny. Mm. But my mom always said that they would have 7 or 8 hunters that came, you know, from the city. Mm-hmm. And she liked it because they were like repeat guys and they thought she was a cute little girl and they would like bring her some candy or whatever, right. you know. But my grandma like cooked for them, you know, got up early and they had a big
Native
breakfast.
Native hospitality, took good care of them.
Yeah, took really good care of them. But then they got a little, you know, they give them a portion of the meat.
Oh, sure. You know? That's so, your winter, that's going to help out a lot. It's the same story with us. We're right here in Petoskey Harbor Springs, Little Traverse Bay Bend area, and so we're a fishing community.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we got our reaffirmation from the tribe in 94. Up until that, all of our fishing was illegal. So they would fish at night. I can't tell you how many people died.
Yeah.
Because of fishing at night. You know how dangerous it is to fish at night? We didn't get our reaffirmation until 94. They didn't close the school, the boarding school there. Holy Childhood is the name of it. They've sent people from here to Holy Childhood. They sent them as far away as they could. Mm-hmm. And our people ended up going to Mount Pleasant or somewhere else.
Yeah,
Know what I mean? Yeah. They yanked the future right out of your family. And sent them all over the place. Well, there in Harbor, Holy Childhood didn't close until 84. So, yeah, all of that stuff is still real recent. But on the same token, it says something about our resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we're still a tribe. We're fighting with the state right now, our particular tribe, over our boundaries. They're saying, oh, your reservation is whatever you own. So we're in court. It's pretty bad in the town. Like, I only go to certain businesses and certain places because...
Same way here.
Is it?
Yeah. Yep.
Is it? Okay.
I'm really excited. I mean, I can't be on Facebook all the time, but I've been trying to follow it as much as I can, you know.
Yeah, so while I've been here, that's what I've been throwing stuff up on there. There's some people that are following that stuff, so... It was Crystal that reminded me, because when they come in, they're like celebrities to me. Those mats.
Yeah.
And it's like my whole, like, everything around me just, and I'm so hyper-focused. We got to see some pretty cool ones at the Science Museum.
So you're going to look at the Lanham collection at BSU tomorrow?
Is that Lanham?
I think it's Lanham. I think that's how that's said.
I don't know what archival information is connected to it, because when I was here before, Bill didn't know anything about that. And I was just going through there going, you have mats, and they're just all over, just on the wall, and a lot of them. But any archival information, I hope that they'll get it to Crystal so that we can start matching up. The part of the theory behind there's certain techniques, like how a salvage edge is done,
mm-hmm.
or a certain style of or the cord, or how it's put, or design, and things like that seem to be repeated within families.
Oh, okay.
So start to identify that the Sam family did this, and the Humphreys did that. And this one was really emotional. It almost made me cry. This is a Made mat. Was definitely used. I'm sorry, I'm just hogging it off. I was there.
Come on, Renee, you saw it. You were there. I'm just looking at a picture. So, I'm not Madean. If I'm asking something I shouldn't know, that's fine. But so, how are you, like, is it the colors that they're using or a design that they're using?
We got to see some archival information.
Oh, okay.
Not sure about the maker on that. But they had a water drum on there. They had a grandfather on there.
Oh, okay.
They have the grandfather, too.
They have that? Mm-hmm. Where?
Where?
Oh, see? Where did it?
Well, it was a part of the Karen Peterson collection, so it's like, there's like no information. We don't even know for sure if those, if that matched the water drum.
Or if like, they
it went black.
Made the water drum. So like that water drum, like we don't know if it was made specifically to give to them or if they went in and took a water drum. Like they, you need like an expert on water drums to go in and look to see if this was a ceremony water drum.
But the mat had burns in it. Like it was there and being used and a smudge and you know how it is. It, when it came out, I mean they all just kind of take my breath away. But that was an emotional mat. It's beautiful. It's amazing work that she's doing. It's just, it's going to be...
So she's writing her dissertation on...
She's writing on makers and mats and all of this stuff. And she's connecting all the dots together for generations to come. The work that she's doing, families will benefit from.
It's
going to be amazing.
Is she a weaver herself?
Yes. She's good. She's hanging around me. You gotta weave. she's done bags, and she's done. She's in the middle of a finger weaving piece now.
Oh, okay.
And
is that what piqued your interest? She was a weaver, or was just like,
No, I don't. I'm not sure.
Yeah, because like I'm not a weaver. She weaves. Some things she wants to get into the traditional materials more, but. I like to go out in the woods and get the stuff.
Oh, okay.
And do the stuff and then watch somebody else, you know, that's my thing. It's like that. So
that's all part of it.
So what's happening when it's ready? What's like...
It should have been like right after sugar time.
Okay.
But people are getting ready to tap down south already.
Okay.
Some people tapped in February. This is crazy.
That's crazy, yeah.
It's unheard of. Was it last year or the year before they tapped in January?
Well, so he and I felt like we should have tapped in January a couple years ago, too.
Yeah, because if you didn't, you missed it.
You missed it. Yep.
You missed the first part. Mm-hmm. And then it got cold again, and then the second run wasn't as good as the first. So, and it happened in January. So follow your gut, and listen to the trees.
Yeah.
Just listen to the trees, follow your gut, because this climate change is upon us, and pretty soon, I don't know.
You know, those nuthatches and those chickadees tell you, too, the way they sing different when it's time.
So, it was right after Sugarbush, but Sugarbush is earlier, so maybe the cedars will be ready sooner than later. So, it's just kind of hard to tell. You got to go out and check. You're looking for trees with long, straight growth, not a lot of branches.
Okay.
This big is nice.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And anything smaller than that, you're really going to hurt it.
Okay.
So you're looking for a hardier tree. I don't see that you have big woods. Have you been clear cut here?
You were driving through when you were coming in is the Chippewa National Forest, which is heavily logged.
Oh, okay. So that's all new growth.
Yeah.
There was nothing in there.
You have to know where to go for the older trees.
Oh, okay.
And, we live in a really, where we live at is along, it's called the Necktie River. There's a story about that, but all large cedars in there, and then the younger ones, you know, like, that were trying to grow up in between, so we have trees that size that are nice and straight.
For a long time. Now, you got to really pay attention to the bark, because it's just like with ash, the thicker the canopy.
Mm-hmm.
The straighter the tree's going to go.
Because
it's got to go really strong and fast to get to the canopy and get those ultraviolets. Right. And if stuff's been moved around right next to the road, it'll turn.
Right.
Because the road changed things. Right. And so it's like, I can go over here. So if you look at the pattern of the bark on the outside, sometimes it'll go right around like that. That's not what you want. Yeah. You're looking for nice, straight growth. Of course, put your SEMA down. And at the bottom, you want to pull twice. But on a tree that big, you're only going to get this much.
Okay.
And it'll be fine. Now, it's a culturally modified tree after that. Because you went and took it from there. That I go not on our land. Mm-hmm. I go into state and national forests, and I harvest from there. Because if we ever have to go, well, this is significant to us. There'll be culturally modified trees inside of there, and say we've been harvesting from here for a long time, because it'll create a scab. Watch for those if you get into old growth that hasn't been clear cut. Like, we've been clear cut lots in Michigan, but we still have some old growth. You just have to know where you're going. You'll find some of those trees that look like there's where it healed in as it grew. Long strips on them. You want to take some time and stand where somebody else stood, because somebody else stood right there and harvested. You know what I mean?
I think, remember when we were doing that soil sampling, we were walking through all those cedar trees? I saw what you're talking about. It was so hard to get to.
Right.
There was some serious work to get back to those cedars. But I saw something, I was like, what?
The thicker the growth, the better the quality of the straightness of the bark and all of that stuff. Plus, you want to get off the beaten path. You don't want it. I never get anything too close to the road because of the salt and the oils and all of that stuff. There's all kinds of stuff grown in the ditch that's really interesting and it's valuable to me, but I don't really mess with it there because we're using that for our ceremonies and stuff nowadays, so we don't want to do that. Wow. Over at Mille Lacs, not in the Four Seasons room, they have two mats that are rolled up in the back there. If you look at the way a piece was started and ended, the middle is gravy. What you need to know is how to start it
and how to end it.
Are
you feeling like there's a revitalization of this art coming, or is that just
perfect?
I think that our younger generations, the younger people, are coming forward going, I think I missed something.
Yeah.
Somebody, I didn't get this. So I've got some young people coming to me and going, teach me my culture. I go, oh, honey, you're speaking English, and I know you don't mean that, because you are your culture. You are the culture. What you want is to learn your traditions. But when we're using this foreign language, I understand that what it is that they mean. Say, you know, I make my moccasins, I make my native clothes, I'm going to the powwow. Something's missing.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't satisfying. What are you doing? And why are you doing that? And why do you keep on doing that? And so, I do. And the places that I'm going, the places that we've gone to, I've been telling them, you should display this more.
Yeah.
You should put this out there. Because a lot of our people don't even know that they existed. They have no idea. They think that a sweat lodge was always covered with blankets. What did we do before then?
Yeah.
And when they go and they have ceremony, they're hollering for a piece of red cloth. Every time they need a piece of red cloth, that's taking the place of a cedar mat. The cedar mat is the red cloth. Nobody's doing cedar mats anymore, so the elders got in the habit of saying they're calling for a red cloth. It's the same thing. I don't know if the Jingdamuk around here, you go to the powwow, and they have two grand entries a day. Uh-huh. They change things. There's one in the morning and one in the evening, and they actually march the flags in there. But the sun still only comes up once a day, and it still only goes down once a day. So I've asked those guys, why are you doing that a second time? Who are you carrying that flag for? The flag or for yourself? And I put them in check in that way. Because if we change those traditions too much for the young people, they think that's the tradition. They think that you got to have a piece of red cloth to have that ceremony. Mm-hmm. And they don't understand the original purpose. I'm not saying that I want to get rid of my electricity and my flush toilet, because I like those things. I like those things. But you have to understand the original and what those things are taking place of.
Yeah.
And what the original intention was. And so I believe with all my heart, we start using these things again, we can make the medicine work. I like to quote that guy named Fool's Crow. He's an amazing, amazing guy. And it was actually in a girly magazine that his interview was in. My husband indulged in girly magazine. And I was reading through there, and his name was Fool Crow. He was Sioux. I don't know what kind of Sioux he was, but anyway, he was in there, and he got so old that he quit talking English. So in order to do the interview, they had to have an interpreter. So I love the guy already. Because it's like, screw you and your foreign language. If you want to interview me, I'm going to speak in my language, because native thought and the native language is different than English.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's different. We don't have a word for sovereignty in our language. Yeah. It is in our language. When you say Minobemadzuan, it's there. Mm-hmm. Sovereignty is there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You already said it. So some, we can't translate those things. So this old guy decided that he's going to be speaking just his first language. So he's got an interpreter in there, so you got to know that some of it gets lost.
Right.
In the interpretation. Anyway, and so he says, and he's medicine man. He does spiritual healings, and he uses the medicines to heal you physically. He's big medicine in his tribe. So, and I think he's associated with Sundance as well, because I remember this guy. Anyway, so Fool's Crow is given this interview, and they said, and they said to him, the interviewer's like, well, I don't know, I don't want to be rude or anything, but you're getting old, you know, and you must have an apprentice or someone that you're coddling along the way, because of all your vast and wealth of knowledge, to leave that for your people, you know, because you're getting old. You certainly have an apprentice or something like that. And the interpreter, I don't know exactly what he said, because I wasn't there, but the interpreter said, my people don't deserve that. And I got mad. I'm reading the article, and I got mad. Now, this is 25 years ago. And I got mad, and I thought, well, what a mean old... I quit the article, but it was bothering me until I went back, and I finished the article until he finished his thought. And what he said was amazing, and it's true even today. He said, when I die, I'm not taking the medicine with me. It's still there. They have to go out and find it and get it. The journey of harvesting and collecting is 80% of the process, and the gift is within that. That's really the gift, because you reconnect with the earth, you reconnect with that plant, with the wildlife around there, with the environment, with the weather, with Shkokomequa, everything around there. And then the weaving is the gravy. But that's not the real prize. The prize is in the process of going out there and getting the stuff. So I love Fool's Crow. So I can teach the technique, and somebody can learn, look, I can make that bag, but where's the spirit in it? What else is connected with it? I like the thought when I go out and, okay, let's take the cedar, and I go out and I spend a day, because I do things that I always used to do, I just take longer to do it. I'm slowing down. So what used to take a day now takes like 3 days. I gotta go back and finish what I started, and I gotta do all this stuff. Anyway, so I go out and I'll get the cedar and start processing the cedar, and then come home and I can't stop because I get in the zone. You know, and I forgot to eat, I forgot to drink, I forgot. But I can't stop because I'm just messing with the stuff. Well, it's real sticky with bagu, but more times than not, I'm going to make something. I'm going to make a small bag, I'm going to make a basket, I'm going to make something out of it, because I just do. And when I'm done and I look at it, and then I know that that tree had enjoyed sunrise that morning, and now it's a basket. And to me, that's amazing.
It
really is.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It has changed its purpose along the way. So if I can take that and bottle feed it to all of our young ones, so that when they grow up, as they grow up, they go, oh, I need to go back here. I think that's automatically happened. So what Fool's Crow was saying, you know, I'm not taking the medicine with me. It's all still there. They just have to go get it. I think our young people are asking for it. This time is prophesized.
Oh, yeah, they are. Yeah. People are hungry for it. But they're also so disconnected. Like, there's a lot of people that they want to go out in the woods, but they're actually even afraid to go out in the woods because they think they're going to get lost.
Mm-hmm.
or they
there's
don't know
wrong
things.
When we're scared of our own mother.
Yeah, and
I come across
that.
People like that all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, so I have a lot of people that will ask me to go out in the woods and get them stuff because mm-hmm. they know I know my. I know a few little sure. things about plants. And they're like, "Can you go get this for me? Because this guy told me this might help me." I'm like, "Well, come with me to go get this, because
yes.
you know you gotta be a part of this." And they're like, "No, can't you just go get that for me?" And then, you know, they're totally missing the point. You got to come
and the
be
medicine
a part of
might
that.
Not work for them.
It might not work. Why can't you be part of that?
They have to be part of that.
I can't
remember what I told you when I think I told you when a theater Famat from Wicomicon. Said mm-hmm. this woman said, he said, I gotta have this medicine. Okay, I'll take you to the place. So he took her to the place, said, "There it is. It's the whole, remember what I showed you?" "Yeah, I remember." So she's got her little thing and she goes out there and she's got her same on. She's doing her thing and goes off and does that and comes back and said, "Okay, you know, you've been out here long enough to do your thing. Create that relationship with the plant, ask the plant to give it what it needs for your healing and all of that." And she's sitting there and she's just distraught. I said, "Well, what's wrong?" She said, "I can't see it. I can't find it." She was sitting in it. And he said, "Oh, that's not for you."
Yeah.
Put her in the car and take her back.
Yeah.
It wasn't her time.
Right.
She wasn't ready. You have to see if... I don't mind planting seeds, and that's kind of like what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Planting seeds along the way. And then they go, and then to finish it, they got to come and take care of the right. rest of it. Right. Because it's not the same. I can come and do a workshop and say, "Here's all the cedar and let's go ahead and do this." I don't do workshops that way, by the way. Then they get to make something. Then they get to make something, but then they can never make another one. They don't know how to do the rest of the process.
Right.
So if that happens... When that happens, I mean, I love my people. Why would I do that to them?
Yeah.
I want to create more weavers. And the more weavers that we have, more people creating these things, the better the connection that they're going to have with their mother.
Yeah.
And that whole process, the 80%, not right. the 20%, you know.
Yeah.
So you go out, test it, make a cut. Down there, you can use Mokman. Sometimes I kind of take a hatchet, but you want to, you know, not dig into the tree because mm-hmm. every cut that you make hurts.
Right.
So I cut the tree. This is the same exact way. Do you remember how to do basswood?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. The first pull that you take, that's just loosening it from the tree, and it's usually only 4 or 5 foot.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second pull, man, and it'll go. And then you're doing the Tarzan thing. It won't come off. It's hung up on a branch. And you're swinging around at that. I mean, I've been out there. I've actually tied a piece to my bumper and pulled it.
Did you?
Yeah, because I could not get. I was hanging on there. Could not get. I swear I was Tarzan. Come on.
I think you'd be Jane.
Just wouldn't do it. Yeah, and I couldn't leave it because it was a beautiful piece. So, yeah. So the same thing kind of happens with okay. cedar. I kind of take a half inch to 3/4 inch and pull that piece, and it'll only come up, you know, 2-3 foot, mm-hmm. whatever. And then the next piece is the wide piece.
Okay.
Because then you don't have to break it on both sides. And you get a good strip. Of course, it gets narrow as it mm-hmm. goes because the tree does. And then pull that, and just like basswood, break it. Pull the outer bark from the inner bark. Uh-huh. And then while you're right out there in the bush, there's lots of big U in there. There's lots mm-hmm. of sap inside in there. Right while you're there in the bush, like I take my chair out there. I used to sit on the ground, but if I get on the ground, then it's going to take. If you see me sitting on the ground, call 911. I probably die. I don't get on the ground anymore because it ain't pretty when I get up. It's just... It's not. It's just a rough way to go. So I take my chair in the bush nowadays, and I'll sit there and I'll split it again.
Okay.
Just like you've seen black ash.
Black ash.
Yep. Yep. Same thing, only you don't need it. I don't know
you
if...
You don't put it in there.
You don't need a device.
Okay.
It splits nice and easy, especially when it's right now.
Right now, yeah.
Right now. And you... Depending on what you're going to make, all of this stuff is split at least... It's just once.
Okay.
Okay. roll it up and bind it and forget about it for a year. It takes a long time. So if you put it outside, it's going to rain on it and sun on it, and it's going to turn it darker, 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 darker. The patina will automatically get darker. So I roll mine up and I have it on this big pole out in a workspace that mm-hmm. I have that isn't heated, it's wood heat. Mm-hmm. So it gets to freeze and thaw and freeze and thaw, and it pushes that big hue out. And okay. you get these little crystals of amber starting. And when it's time to work on it, before you put it in the water, unroll your cedar bark and just wipe that off. You can use it right away fresh. So I got enough out there to make a couple mats to fit maybe this table.
Yeah.
And a few bags and stuff like that, just for my own personal use. And I harvested probably 2 days to get all of that. Not all of it was split. If you can't split it that day, because it's usually a busy time of year. Yeah. Well, every season is a busy time of year, except now. Winter that's the time that I do a lot of my best weaving.
You're weaving, yeah?
Yeah, because I just don't want to go out. But I have to use what I harvested the year before. So when I get home, I've seen so many amazing cedar mats. I'm just chomping at the bit to get home. So I want to get home. So after it's split, if it's not split, you can just stick it in warm water. But beware that every time you put it in water, it's going to deepen the patina. But you can oxidize it, I think is the word for it, if I'm using it correctly, where you can take some red it. It's almost like redding it. Cedar splints that are already sized and everything, and just put it in water. Put it in there for a day or two. Mm-hmm. It'll turn black. What? Especially if you have it in a metal pan. Like sometimes I soak my stuff in a galvanized pan because the metal will react to that. So, and you just put it in there.
Different metals make different colors?
You got it, girl. Because okay. I'll put mine also inside. I have a wooden bowl, a big wooden bowl that I use to soak, and it just turns redder. You put it in the other one, it'll turn black.
Yeah. That's cool.
We're scientists.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing? I saw a bag today at the Tweed Institute of Art that had a color in it that I can relate to. I think it was all natural dyes. That's tag elder bark. It's a cross between an orange and a red. Yeah.
I can see tag elder making that color.
Yep.
Yep.
You ever want yellow, you can use, and one of the favorites in our area is to use birch leaves. You can use them green or dry.
Oh, really?
It'll turn yellow.
Ooh.
I know. Wow. So you see a birch come down or something, go pick all the leaves off it. That way you know you're getting birch.
Right.
You know what I mean? And then never put it in plastic.
So just as a...
Put it in plastic. Put it in a basket if you got one. If you don't, a paper bag, something where it'll bleed because it'll be green leaves.
Is it just a paper birch or does the yellow birch do the same thing?
I don't know.
Let's try it.
Right? What I have a hard time with is blue. I can't find a good blue. So when Rick came in, we're seeing these beautiful turquoises and these bright purples. There it is. There it is. Oh, it really shows on the camera.
Wow, that looks like...
That's all natural.
That looks like it's yarn.
Look at how she took those colors and she chose those pieces. Irrigate it like that.
Oh my
God. So do you know what year this was? Was she influenced by, you know, plaids that she saw from... Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I think...
Gorgeous.
Amazing.
I think that they were just doing those like that. Like we're seeing a lot of twill weaving. That's just a straight weave with a play on colors. Mm-hmm. And then we're seeing twill weaving with not a lot of color in it, but to accentuate the weaving itself, like the style of the weaving. I get feelings more from the color than from the design. The color will give you kind of a clue because color is really... strong medicine. Color is some really powerful medicine. So I get certain feelings off those mats that I see, and I go through a gamut of emotions. Some of them are dead, like the mat is gone.
Mm-hmm.
Like the spirit of that plant, everything about it is gone. Other ones are sad and other ones are just indifferent. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. It's just like I'm still here. That's all I'm gonna tell you. Still here.
This program has been funded by the Legacy Arts, Culture and Heritage Fund of Minnesota.